Hey, how are you? And if you say you're fine, I'm gonna assume you mean like the acronym. Freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. So, have you heard the term lifequake? Well, in this podcast, we talk about lifequakes, those unpredictable seismic shifts that, in time, lead to profound personal growth and empowerment. Here, you can expect heartfelt stories that reveal both the joy and the discomfort of unexpected change. And I think you're going to like it here. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Today's story belongs to Verity.
Your life is a book. If you're not enjoying the read, pick up your pen and write a different story.
That's next. I know, you're busy, and planning what your family will eat isn't always top of mind. Well, that's why we love YouCook, and I can give you 50% off your first order. YouCook has really helped us eat tasty, nutritious food, and it saves me from spending time in the shops because they deliver all of the ingredients for my chosen meal kits right to my door. YouCook's always adding new recipes to the website, and I've even picked up some new skills because of their easy-to-follow recipe cards. And because YouCook gives you exactly what you need for each recipe, you never waste any food. I love the convenience. I love the variety and the flexibility of their meal kits because you can choose 2, 3, or 4 different dishes to feed 1, 2, 3, or 4 people and stay in control of how much you spend. Everything on the website looks amazing. So choose from meal kits or ready-made frozen crafts, weekend boxes, desserts, pizza, lunch boxes, wine. They've got it and you can have it for less. Go to youcook.co.za and use my code #shift50 and pay half price for your first order. Go get it, shifters. That's youcook.co.za and use the code #shift50 at checkout to get 50% off your first order. Do it today. There's a saying that you regret more the things you didn't do than the things you actually did. Sometimes we use the saying to justify big, bold moves like splurging on a luxury item or to excuse some outlandish behavior. But in reality, the things you didn't do, the what-ifs, the could've, would've, should'ves, the if-onlys can haunt you for a long time.
The biggest regret I have is at 23, you don't really tell your parents how awesome they are.
How many of us can honestly say that we were showing our parents gratitude in our younger years? And why would we? For most of us, in our teens and 20s especially, we're finding ourselves in this great big world. And life is full of possibilities. We live fast and hard, with little capacity to appreciate what and who we have.
My dad was a character. He was 48 when I was born, so he was a much older dad back in the 70s. That was like really geriatric. So I had this older dad. He was tall, he was skinny, he was bald. When you'd pick me up, people thought he was my grandfather. So as a teenager, I was always like, oh, so uncool.
But now, looking back, Verity can see clearly how cool her dad actually was.
So he was reading any book around the power of the mind, you know, Think and Grow Rich or How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then the poor man would try and share it with his opinionated teenage daughter. And, you know, so come on, Dad, like, really, what do you know? So he actually took to writing me letters and he would leave them at the top of the stairwell in our house. You know, if I'd been in a particularly bad mood or a real brat, and he'd be like, it's very hard living with a 16-year-old and I can see you going through a lot. And then he'd give me all this advice going, maybe this will make sense later. And he just did that relentlessly.
At the time, Verity didn't realize the value of these letters. I mean, she was just 16. But her dad stuck with it, kept writing her letters, knowing in his hard-earned wisdom that these things will be important in time.
I mean, I speak about my dad a lot. The man's had world acclaim in speeches I've done because he really was such an inspiration.
Verity was 24 and pursuing a music career as a songwriter in London when her dad became ill.
My sister and my mom didn't want to tell me that my dad was so sick. They thought he had flu, so they were downplaying it to me. But something in me just was like, and I was about to go to Scotland with friends, and my dad said, go, have fun, that'll be amazing. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to surprise them.
But with just a few days before Verity was supposed to fly out and surprise her family back in South Africa, she had this overwhelming sense of dread.
3 days before I was meant to leave, I had this bizarre feeling, and I kept phoning my mom to check on my dad. And I'd phoned him on the way to hospital, you know, and said, Doc, Dad, are you okay? I'm worried about you. And my dad, with his quirky sense of humor, had said, don't worry, you know I love breakfast in bed. He just was an absolute card.
But despite her dad's attempts at making her feel more comfortable and that things were going to be okay, Verity still had this uneasy feeling.
And eventually I got hold of my mom and she was sobbing. And I was like, what's happened? And she said, he had a stroke in the ambulance being transferred. I managed to get off the phone and get on a flight in December from London to Cape Town that night. Changed my ticket. It was unbelievable. Friends dropped everything. Some of them ran out of their jobs just to get me to the airport. And that was the longest 13-hour flight of my life.
Verity spent those 13 hours strapped into a seat, thousands of meters up in the air. She was making her way home without knowing what reality would be waiting for her when she lands, not knowing if her dad would be able to greet her when she touched down in Cape Town.
And I was shaken to my core, and we had a week with him, and it was really rough because he was paralyzed. So this very verbal father that I'd had could just look at me with his eyes, and he was totally paralyzed from the stroke. He couldn't speak, he couldn't swallow. And yeah, it was deeply, deeply traumatic watching that and having to realize that he was never going to see me do anything with my life. He wouldn't walk me down the aisle. He wouldn't meet my children. He had a living will. He was someone, if it's my time, it's my time. But yeah, it was really hard. And that living will, we had to override it because it had stipulated that there would be no tube feeding. But I think when you sign something like that, you think you're unconscious at that point. He was fully awake and aware, and we didn't know if he was going to survive or not. And we realized it wasn't for us to choose, that it's not if he, you could see he was hungry. It was a really, really hard week.
Verity's dad had contracted a staphylococcus infection in his heart, which caused those flu-like symptoms when he initially fell ill. That infection went on to cause a stroke. And because of the stroke, the doctors were not able to operate on his heart. And after what was a really, really hard week, Verity's father passed away.
It threw me. I went from being a very upbeat, bubbly girl to someone who struggled with small talk at, you know, because everyone was still partying and was still going to bars and clubs. And I actually couldn't do it anymore because I'd really seen the reality of life, that we lose the ones we love.
Verity's the baby in the family. She was in her mid-20s when her dad passed away, while her siblings were in their late 30s and had grown up lives that they needed to return to make sense of this loss in their own way. So when they left, Verity stayed.
And I was with my mom. I mean, I actually, the minute I got home, I got into her bed and I slept in her bed with her for months because I couldn't handle the pain of seeing her having lost her life partner. So I think I took that on because, you know, my sister and brother had left. And so I was the one who stayed at home.
Verity's sense of loss carried over into her work.
I think I processed it through my music. I wrote a song about him, Forever and Me, and it was really just celebrating the lessons he'd taught me and how he'd guided me.
At the time of her dad's passing, Verity was a songwriter. And what she really wanted was to be a singer. But fear had held her back. And her dad knew this.
The last letter he ever wrote me, I was living in London, too afraid to start singing, feeling sorry for myself. And he took the time to write me a 4-page letter about how all the people in our family, my brother, my sister, other examples, had turned their lives around and that I had that choice.
Verity's dad had always believed in the power of the mind. And this was a way of being that was modeled to her from a very young age.
We were a very cerebral family, so it was always these big dinners around our dining room table and talking about the power of the mind. Both my parents were into it. My brother and sister were into it. So from a young age, I was watching the people I loved and admired play with manifestation, play with, they were doing affirmations. I mean, this is coming out of the 70s and 80s. They had all those tapes that people used to listen to. So I was brought up with that.
And so while his death shook her to her core, Verity's dad had given her 24 years worth of lessons and countless number of letters about believing in the power of dreams.
And I didn't know what to do, but I also knew that I could not live a life rooted in fear, and I couldn't live a life where I was putting my dreams off till tomorrow, because my dad's death had shown me that tomorrow is not guaranteed. And so I did, at that point, make a very strange decision a few months after he died.
And that decision was to run the Knysna Half Marathon with a friend.
I don't run. I'm not very fit. But I said yes because it would give me something to do.
Grief can make you do strange things. Although Verity said yes to doing a half marathon, the thought of actually training for it was exhausting. And she did what many of us do. She started listing all the excuses why she wouldn't, couldn't, shouldn't do the half marathon. But then she remembered a book by Paulo Coelho called The Pilgrimage. And that's when Verity decided that she needed her own pilgrimage. So, rather than run the Knysna half marathon, she decided to walk the Camino de Santiago across Spain.
And so in my mind, I thought it was easier to walk 800 Ks than it was to run 21. And I made a decision in a day. I signed up to go and start walking on the 6-month anniversary of my dad's death and what would have been his 72nd birthday. And that was the hardest thing I'd ever done. I did it on my own, but I did it in his memory, and I did it to show myself that I could finish something. I could start and I could finish something hard. And I called it a journey for the soul and the souls, because my word, my feet were a mess at the end. But when I got to Santiago and I could look at a country and go, wow, I've walked across that. I can walk onto a stage. I can take a chance. I can try. And I came home, and that's when I recorded a demo.
We make this show as a labor of love, and because we believe stories about possibility are what the world needs to hear. And we'd love it if you left this show a 5-star review and followed Something Shifted on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever you listen to good podcasts. Go ahead and share this story of possibility with someone you love too. So, Verity walked the Camino de Santiago, and she returned with a new vision for her music career, to record her demo and finally conquer her stage fright. Now, Verity had dabbled with visualization and tapping into the power of your mind, manifesting your dreams when she was younger. It's actually how she came to be in London as a songwriter in the first place. And one of the clearest examples of tapping into the power of her mind for Verity happened 4 years earlier, when she was 20. She attended a workshop with her sister and heard this story about someone who'd written a letter to the future as if something had already happened.
I was struggling to work out how to get into the music industry because I was writing lyrics, but I was struggling with the music. My music was a bit it was sweet, but it wasn't great. And I was like, oh, I just need to find someone who is great with music, struggles with lyrics, has a record deal so I can get my words out into the world. And so Kay, my sister, said, well, why don't you write a letter? So I was like, okay, why not? And I went home, and I still remember I dated it the 20th of November, and it would have been 1995. And I said, dear perfect music writing partner, I'm so excited I met you tonight at LaMed. Unbelievable that you have a record deal. I put it all in there and said, like, I can't wait to make music with you. Love, Verity. And I put it in my drawer, and I got on with exams at university. And when the 20th of November came, I was actually far away from Cape Town. And I remember going, oh, I was meant to be at LaMed. Like, that didn't happen. I got back a week later, and one of the friends I'd been there with, like, phoned up and said, oh, let's, why don't we go to LaMed?
It was 1995, and the vibe that night at LaMed just wasn't giving. So Verity and her friend decided to leave. As they got up to walk out the door,
a guy came running after us and said, are you girls going? Don't you want to come have a drink with me and my friend? And we were like, oh my word, not this. And then something in me went, just say yes. So we said, okay. And we went over, and he had this quiet little guy sitting next to them. And he said, this is Tom. And we're like, hi, Tom, nice to meet you. And he says, Tom is the lead singer of Black Diamond. And I was like, what? And we chatted, and he said, no, I write the music. I really struggle with lyrics.
Just like Verity had written in her letter 2 months earlier.
I don't think I've ever told this story before. And I was like, no ways. And I was in the BMG studios a week later. I wrote lyrics for two songs for them, and one of them was called Southbound. That band became semi-sane. Tom left it, and it was the lead song for Big Brother when it first came out.
My jaw dropped when I first heard this story. And Verity goes on to say that she learned a very valuable lesson through this exercise in 1995, and that is to be very specific about the details.
Now, the only thing I didn't stipulate in my letter was that I got writing credits or royalties. But I got exactly what I'd asked for. And I think because I'd done it in such a playful way, not really thinking it would work, there was just no resistance in the way of that manifesting. But it was freaky. And that's the kind of stuff that, like, my family had encouraged and we played with. And, you know, I've tried it many times for the lottery. It's never worked. But there's been a few times where that's their influence, and that's the magic they've helped me create.
So with the visualization and the positivity that her parents instilled in her, together with the experiences of the universe responding to her dreams, and the confidence she slowly forged on that 800-kilometer walk across Spain, Verity knew she wanted to get over her stage fright.
I'd moved to America. I'd followed a man to America, as we say, great life choice. But it got me there, and I was having to tell people I was a singer, and I was trying to get things going. So the person who helped me get over my stage fright was a singing coach in America called Joe, and he was this African-American man, retired Motown singer, looked like James Brown, absolute character. And I went to Joe for lessons because I still was incredibly nervous. I lacked confidence. And he was like, Verity, I'm not going to teach you how to sing. I'm going to teach you how to be confident. I was like, okay, well, good luck. Let's see how you do that. And Joe's way of teaching confidence was to make anything that could go wrong, go wrong. He would interrupt me. He would turn up the music, turn down the music, knock over the mic, shout at me. And every time I would lose my place, he'd be, Verity, when things go wrong, just keep on. And at the end of my 3 months with him, I wasn't sure if the lessons were working, but I was clear my relationship wasn't working. So I came home and something had worked because I had the courage to get on stage, and Joe was right.
She'd done it. Verity had overcome her stage fright and had slowly started building her music career by gigging around Cape Town. And in order to take her career to the next level, Verity knew she needed to record an album. But she didn't have the 300,000 odd rand to make that happen.
And I got stuck at that point where I think a lot of people get stuck, going, there's my dream, here's an obstacle. Oh, life's not fair. People, why me? And I was that person. And my dad would not have been proud. Like, I got into a proper victim state. And I stayed there for 2 years. And then eventually I was like, I either have to give up or have to get creative. Something needs to shift. And that was when I sat down with my sister, Kay, who in our family, she does all the hard work. She's the oldest. She'll tell you she does all the hard work.
It was at this point that Verity and Kay rolled up their sleeves and did what their dad had taught them to do. Use the power of their minds. This time they turned to the Six Thinking Hats by Edward de Bono as a problem-solving framework to raise money.
We did 30 minutes of using this amazing framework for thinking, and I came up with an idea to ask people to buy an album I hadn't recorded. Now, everyone will go, oh, that's crowdfunding now. And I'm like, yes, but in 2005, that was called crazy. Like, no one had done that before. But the obstacle and finally realizing I couldn't stay stuck pushed me to shift past it, to find a way to solve that problem and to take action on a crazy idea and really take a chance with possibly failing. But I was so excited to see if I could get people to buy something that didn't exist. But we sold 2,000 copies of nothing in 25 countries. We gave 10% to charity. We released it in 2007. And I didn't become famous for music. Everyone was like, come speak to us about innovation. I was like, that's not the plan. I'm trying to be a pop star.
So with all the positive thinking, the manifestation, using the power of her mind, you might be wondering, did Verity make it as a pop star?
Sure, I was very disappointed the music career didn't take off. But I really started to grapple with depression, with anxiety. For anyone who knows the Enneagram personality thing, I'm a four.
And for those that don't know the Enneagram personality thing, a four is an individualist. They're self-aware, sensitive, emotionally honest, creative people. But they can also be moody and self-conscious.
So shame is my friend, often in the back seat and sometimes in the driver's seat if I'm not careful. So I really struggled with my life doesn't look the way it's supposed to look. And it was my ego's idea of you're meant to be famous, the world is meant to love you and choose you and say yes to you, and then you'll be happy. And my soul was going, no, actually, this was showing you how to do things differently. And now you have the opportunity to help other people solve their problems. Because I had to have the grace to let go of the ego's dream and step onto the soul path. And then my life became so much easier. The biggest lesson I learned from that was that your ego often has one idea of what your life should look like, and your soul has another.
The journey to her soul path was also a steep climb. But by now you know that Verity doesn't choose the easy route. She doesn't do the 21 kilometers when she can go 800 kilometers. Verity's soul path led her to the World Championships of Public Speaking. And this would be her stage.
I had entered in 2012, not understanding the scope and of how huge this contest was, with 35,000 contestants from 150 countries. I competed again in 2015. I got as far as the Western Cape level, where I came third. And then at that point, I put a lid on it and thought, bit of a fixed mindset. And then something shifted for me in 2020. And the man who became the 2020 world champion, Mike Carr, his speech was about innovation. And his message was, the victory is not in the result. The victory is in the try. And I think we all, like, when you hear a message, when you're ready for it. And I was like, I'm not even trying with this contest. And a week later, I had to do a little speech at my club, and I'd shared a story about my mum growing up would always say to me, Verity, we need to leave the world better than we find it. And I would get, again, as a tempestuous 16-year-old, oh, come on, mum, what do you know? And I wrote a speech about how actually that is how I've lived my life. She'd succeeded in drilling it into me. I suddenly thought, that's a contest speech. That's a speech that could do well in a contest. And like seconds after thinking that, a voice inside me said, you're going to be the next world champion. And I got goosebumps because I was like, no, come on, like 35,000 people, no one from Africa's ever won that. That's ridiculous.
And so Verity set out to become the world public speaking champion in 2021.
And so I started working 3 months before the first contest with this single-minded focus to bring the trophy back to Africa. So it is the hardest I've ever worked on anything in my life. We're talking 3 to 4 hours a day, writing speeches, delivering them at online clubs, getting feedback, paying for coaching.
Verity's life experiences and the immense amount of effort were starting to pay off.
By the time I won the Southern African level, I had 12 countries going, we think this is going to be the first time someone brings this home to Africa. No pressure. I was like, come on, this is ridiculous. 80 years and no one's won it from this continent and only 5 women? That has to change.
With each new opportunity to deliver the same speech, Verity's confidence continued to grow. And now she found herself in the semi-finals of the World Public Speaking Championships.
8 speakers in the world. I was the only woman left standing and the only speaker from Africa. My speech about my mum got me into the finals.
For the final round, speakers are asked to deliver a brand new speech, something that nobody has heard before. Verity had the chance to tell a very special story.
And I had a second speech ready that I'd been working on for 100 days about my dad and about that last letter he wrote to me before he died. And I gave it everything, and it was life-changing to hear the news that I'd actually won. These speeches were such testaments to my parents that I cried so much while rehearsing them and hoping they could hear how much I loved them. And my speech that I won with was literally saying, your life is a book. If you're not enjoying the read, pick up your pen and write a different story. So it was about being the author of your life.
And so even though Verity might have regretted her teenage feelings towards her dad, she made sure to tell him how cool he was in many ways since.
I did a lot to process that in the years after he passed. I wrote it as a song, and it was what I wanted my dad to know was how much he taught me, and thank you for teaching me to live life with nature's tools, you know, speak other people's tongues, don't stick to stupid rules, do as you would have done. But it really was, he taught me how to live lightly on the world, how to live, but also live lightly with humor and connection to others and to have a reverence for nature. And I told him that, you know, he just could squeeze my hand and look at me. It's easy to think you've got time. So I think he had an inkling, but wherever he's looking down from now, I think he's got a very good idea.
Verity Price works in the competitive industry of public speaking and facilitation, helping others write their own stories. She lives in Claremont with her husband and little boy. And you can listen to the song she wrote for her dad, Forever in Me, on Spotify. Thank you for listening to this episode of Something Shifted. We make this show as a labor of love and because we believe stories about possibility is just what the world needs to hear. We'd really love it if you would share this episode and be part of that shift for someone else too. And if you really like the show, go ahead and leave it a 5-star review and follow Something Shifted on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. You can also leave a comment if you're using Spotify Mobile. I read them all and respond there too. Don't forget to use my code #shift50 at checkout when you place your very first order on youcook.co.za and you'll get 50% off. You can join my mailing list 321SHIFT and start the week off right with 3 things for your mind, 2 things for your body, and 1 thing for your soul every second Sunday. Plus, you'll automatically go into the draw for giveaways and have first dibs on tickets to live events too. All of the links to all of the things that I've mentioned are in the show notes. Big thanks as always to my executive producer for additional writing, Rwanda, and of course to you for believing in possibility. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Bye.